is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Should I welcome Joseph Umeyer, who's traveling, executive director of Secure Free Society. We go to immediately the 60 Minutes interview with the outgoing president of Mexico, AMLO, known affectionately as AMLO, López Obrador. And in a sharp and very blunt exchange with the correspondent from CBS, AMLO listed these proposals in order to satisfy his constituents, in order to close the border or at least not be hostile to the U.S. returning migrants to Mexico after they've crossed without documents into the U.S. AMLO says, yes, I'll help you if the U.S. commits $20 billion a year to poor countries in Latin America, a year, and the Caribbean, lifts sanctions on Venezuela, end the Cuban embargo, and legalize law-abiding Mexicans who are now living in the U.S. Joseph, a very good evening to you. I want to start with the demands, claims, assertions by the president of Mexico, and the CBS correspondent very carefully used the word blackmail, diplomatic blackmail. What is your sense of AMLO? Why he would be so blunt and straightforward and a list of demands that cannot be satisfied? Good evening to you, Joe.
Good evening, John. No, so this is very telling, the interview that President López Obrador had with 60 Minutes. And I think very timely in terms of the interest that AMLO has and perhaps some of his regional allies in terms of what's going on in Latin America and how they want to position themselves via the United States. So let me begin by giving some context. So AMLO is ending his fifth year of his term as president. He's not biting for re-election. Mexico doesn't allow for a re-election of presidents. So he's finishing his term, which will effectively end this August. So there's one, you could say he's much more direct with some of his statements in terms of how he feels about the United States and or what he wants to do in terms of positioning with migration, because he doesn't worry about any blowback. And then two, I think the second part of the context of this as well is the timing of it in terms of what's happening, not just on the southern border, but what's happening in Panama with the Darien Gap, what's happening with the Haitians that are potentially moving into Florida. Some are going to actually also move into Central America and Mexico, and what's happening right now with Cuba and Venezuela. And we'll touch on that in a second. But so I think this was a very timely interview for AMLO. And what he says, you know, it's beyond any type of diplomatic blackmail that was alluded to in the interview. It's the definition of weaponized migration. Weaponized migration is when one regime or leader or government of a nation state uses immigration as a method of coercion against a neighboring nation state and government. In this case, it's Mexico and AMLO against the United States. And what he's doing is he's saying that if you don't adhere to these demands, which are very ridiculous demands, then you know, you're not going to get the level of cooperation. He didn't say that directly, but that's what he's implying by making that statement during the interview. And the most notable part about it is the two countries he mentions in it. He talks about giving money to poor Latin American countries, doesn't define those countries. He talks about nationalizing or giving some type of legal status to illegal Mexicans that are in the United States, although he doesn't quantify that at all. But he does highlight Cuba and Venezuela. So to me, this is also an indicator of the weaponization of migration, not just from AMLO, but more importantly, from Venezuela. And as you know, John, as we covered on the show multiple times, we do not get to the level of migrants in terms of encounters and apprehensions on the U.S. Southwest border without the Venezuelan mass migration tackling onto all the other migration that was already happening from Central America and the Caribbean. Venezuela has the largest mass migration in the world. Over 8 million Venezuelans have fled that country since 2014. It's already completely overrun a lot of the borders in South America. And beginning in 2021, it started to come into the U.S. southern border further north. Now, why did that happen? Well, one of the main reasons in 2021 you get Venezuelan migrants going from south to north is because of the air bridge that was developed by the Venezuelan national airline Conviasa and its source destination, Mexico. Mexico became the number one source destination of Venezuelan state-owned airline flights. In the year of the pandemic, for instance, in 2020, Mexico was only among the five countries that airline flew to, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Cuba, and Turkey being the other four, not sadly the most democratic countries in the world. And that was the impetus for the human smuggling operation that the Maduro regime started to catalyze into the U.S. southern border. So this, to me, really, this interview really, to me, it showcases how Mexico, and particularly AMLO, is not just defined within his government, but is defined with his regional allies, and Cuba and Venezuela being perhaps at the top of that list, and how he's basically becoming a messenger of Cuba and Venezuela to try to mediate or broker some type of deal with the United States, which would effectively change U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. It would break with U.N. foreign policy in Latin America for the last half decade.
These remarks are so exaggerated. There was no way they were going to be successful. So what did he want to achieve? To say the U.S., no way I'm dealing with you? Is that the message?
No, I think the message was the narrative that he's trying to amplify, which is a narrative coming out of Havana and Caracas, which is that the root causes, quote unquote, root causes of the immigration to the U.S. southern border is the sanctions of the United States against specific countries in the world, in this case, Cuba and Venezuela. That's why he mentioned the embargo. That's why he mentioned the sanctions on Venezuela, because that's the narrative that Nicolas Maduro has and that Díaz-Canel has in Cuba and in Venezuela. They say that their economic problems aren't the result of their economic malpractice, but rather the result of U.S. sanctions. And that's the reason that their currency plummeted, their GDP's dropped by 60% in the last 10 years. And so they basically shifted the blame. And so AMLO's amplifying that through this interview and, you know, on a very prominent media outlet, like such as 60 Minutes.
Let's go to Caracas then. Venezuela opposition leader Machado picks Corina Yoris as successor for presidential run. The background on this, Maria Machado is nominated by the opposition vote to be on the ballot in July for the presidency. However, the courts in Venezuela have ruled her out to be on the ballot. The suggestion was made the last time Joe and I talked that another person stand in for Maria Machado. Now that decision has been made. Is this something Machado approves of, Joe? Should we regard this as being forced or necessary for the opposition to have a presence?
No, this is absolutely something that Maria Corina has initiated herself. I mean, this is basically her representative into the Venezuelan electoral scenario, given that she's been prohibited from being on the ballot. And it really has a kind of an added marketing effect that Maria Corina Machado is, you know, her first name. She's often referred to as Maria Corina. And then the first name of her is Corina Yolis. So it's like even still a Maria Corina ticket. So that's kind of, you know, in terms of political marketing is how they're messaging it. And, you know, this is basically, to me, Maria Corina's playing kind of a geopolitical chess game with the Maduro regime and trying to wedge their efforts at using a false election to China's propel themselves as some source of a democracy. Maria Corina knows that Venezuela has lost its democracy many years ago, go all the way back to Hugo Chavez, actually, before Nicolas Maduro. She knows that the elections have been used as a sham, as a stalling tactic for a more authoritarian measures that the regime has done, not just in Venezuela, but throughout Latin America. But what she's doing is she's trying to basically make that completely evident to the international community. And then on top of that, begin to kind of build a popular movement, a popular momentum that will allow her not to survive the reign of Nicolas Maduro, because who knows how long that's going to last, but perhaps to survive the reign of other presidents in Latin America, Colombia, Brazil, Mexico, and I'd say even in this case, the Biden administration in the United States that have given oxygen to the Nicolas Maduro regime because they've been able to position itself to re-legitimize itself in Latin America. So I think that that's what this play is about. It's basically about her keeping herself in the game, outmaneuvering the regime because they disqualified her for whatever reason and okay could give, but they're going to have a much harder time disqualifying Corina Yolis, even though they'll do it eventually because they could do whatever they want and it's not a democratic country. But they're going to have a harder time because all the conditions that they laid upon Maria Corina for being disqualified do not apply to this professor that's now on the presidential ballot.
There was talk in Washington of reimposing sanctions because of the banning of Machado. Is that now to be set aside because there will be a nominee from the opposition?
Well, there's been congressional members, notably senators and congressional representatives, I think notably Senator Rubio and Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar, that have asked the Biden administration to reimpose sanctions. It makes sense, and I know that the administration perhaps will be discussing it, but one of the problems that they have is that they just lifted sanctions not too long ago, and so it kind of would be an admission of failure on U.S.-Venezuela policy. And reflect, John, I think we've had this kind of false policy, we've had this false premise on the policy that you can actually steer the Maduro regime into some sense of democratic normalcy. That's been a false premise because they have used these tactics before, negotiations and elections, as a way to get concessions from the United States. Usually what happens is we end up giving those concessions and then they become more repressive than they were before. And that's what's happening in this case, because the other part of this that we didn't talk about yet is the repressive measures that the Maduro regime has done on Maria Corina's team. I mean, we've seen Maduro become very authoritarian, very totalitarian in many instances throughout his tenure, but I don't think I've ever seen in one day they go out to sweep up pretty much all the main campaign leaders of his main political opposition. He's done it over a period of weeks, even months, but not in this one day. And that's what he effectively did last week, when he went after not just the campaign manager, but the advisors, the grassroots director, pretty much everybody in the Vente Venezuela campaign, which is the political party of Maria Corina Machado. Very unprecedented and would warrant sanctions to be reimposed, as congressional members have said and called for. But it's to be determined whether the Biden administration is going to do so.
Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. We turn to the nations in the Americas delivering the most number of young people at the southern border, Venezuela, and number two is Ecuador. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.